Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, well, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast sunny morning with Plain Gardening. You know, it's advancing. I'm trying to catch up on purchasing seeds. Just looking ahead for what I need for seeds, and you know they're not there, folks. It's getting hard to find. I hope if you're having a hard time finding seeds, let me know. We'll look for some places to do it, and we'll think about how to get it done locally. There should be some good local seed sources for you, and we'll talk about that as the morning goes on. But people are taking this very seriously, aren't they? I think it is a great opportunity to learn about how to garden. Here's the trick, though. Here's the trick. So if panic drives you, and we've been talking about this for quite a while, it's very good to take things seriously. But if panic drives you towards gardening, you're probably going to make some mistakes that you'll regret, and you might give up on gardening altogether. And there's no need for that. Here's where a lot of people are starting right now. They're starting with the idea, I got to go borrow a tiller. I'm going to borrow Dad's tiller. I'm going to borrow Granddad's tiller. I'm going to borrow my uncle's tiller because that's what they used. You know, you would do better to try to borrow their mule. A mule would not do as much damage as you're fixing to do with that tiller. The idea is, I guess, that in order to have a big patch of garden, you've got to have a huge machine. And because machines are always going to be the thing, you can't do anything without a big machine, you know? And in a way, machines have got us into this fix, but you don't need a big machine for this. And I guarantee you, if you're just starting out gardening, the last thing you need is a big machine, is a machine that makes noise, is something that allows you to till up more ground than you can handle. And this is going to be one of the problems. This is probably going to be the biggest problem. There are two problems with a tiller, and I have to go over this again. Let me talk to you about it. The first problem, and it's not the biggest, but it's the first problem, and it's going to be the problem you're going to encounter first, is that if the tiller works in the soil you're working in, if it manages to cut through it, you're going to end up tearing up more ground than you can manage, and the weeds are going to eat you alive. Because tillers don't deal well with weeds. They actually make the weed situation worse in many cases. And then you're going to have to till again and till again, and that's going to cause some problems. So don't go the tiller. The second thing that the tiller does, and it's probably the most important thing, and this is very important in our southern climate, is it destroys the way the soil is put together. The soil is put together, you know, it's not just loose, random soil particles. It's not like a bag of flour. That's not what soil is about. Soil is like a building. You literally are tearing into a building when you break into soil. It's a building that has been put together very carefully, if it's healthy soil, by plant roots and by creatures that live in the soil. They're all building these little soil particles into these bigger particles, and in such a way that it holds water really well, and it drains water really well, and it allows oxygen to move through the soil, in and out of the soil, carbon dioxide to move out, oxygen to move in. And it's full of all of this little organic matter that's been incorporated deeply. It has little tiny micro tunnels all through it that allow creatures to move through it and oxygen to move through it. when you use a tiller, because a tiller, of the way a tiller works, it completely destroys the building. It's like saying, I want to go live in this building, so I'm going to tear it down. That's exactly what happens when you use a tiller. You literally tear it, you turn it into a bag of flour, and that's not what you want. That means that soil is going to be very, it means that when it rains, the water's not going to move through the soil very much, so it's going to sit on the top because the soil is going to be compressed. It's not going to move through the soil. When it dries out, there's no way for water to move. There's no storage in there, so the water's not going to move in and out. From the lower levels to the upper levels, it really does a terrible job on your yard. Another reason not to use a tiller. There's a third reason not to use a tiller. And I encourage you to think about this. Tillers rarely break more than about 6 inches of soil. And then it floats. It just floats on the top. And the area below where that tiller reaches, just right at the floor of where the tiller reaches, it's like you pack it. It becomes shiny. The soil is shiny there. It's packed. It's hard because those tines keep banging it. And that packed soil means that the water never drains below that. You get a hard pan. You get a terrible hard pan, particularly in our sandy soils. You're going to get a terrible hard pan, and the roots won't penetrate. There's so many reasons not to use a tiller, particularly along the Gulf Coast. I encourage you to rethink it. Listen, I go back to my granddaddy. When he was telling me what I needed to know about how to garden, he didn't say, listen, son, let me show you the tiller. Let me show you how to put gas in the tiller. Let me show you how to get the spark plug. He didn't talk to me about that. He showed me a garden fork and a garden rake, or showed me a shovel and a garden rake and some seeds and said, son, this is all you need. That's all you need. And that's really all you need. Get you a good garden fork. Get a shovel if you like, but a garden fork's even better. Just wiggle it into the crack the soil. Don't turn it upside down. You definitely, listen, folks, topsoil's been on the top for a long time. I know that's a miraculous thing that the topsoil is always on the top, but there's the way it is. Keep that topsoil on the top. Just crack the soil. Don't turn it upside down. Crack it. Break that hard pan. Take the weeds off the top as best you can. Start small. You don't need a big plot. You'll be amazed at what you can do in a small plot. Small plots are best. And you know, here's the cool thing about gardening. You're not planting everything at once. You don't want to plant everything at once. There are some things that have to be planted right now. There are some things you can wait on. There'll be things you can plant in midsummer. There'll be things you can plant in fall. You're not planting everything now. You're just planting a few things now. We'll talk about what those things are. Before the show's out, you give us a call. We'll talk about it. But start small. Start with the tools that you can use, just a shovel. Just a little garden rake is all you really need to pull everything together. It's amazing how simple gardening is. It's amazing how we can mess that up when we get into a panic and decide, God, I gotta have something really big. The big's not gonna work. The big won't work now. Let's start small. Don't panic. Start small. The weather is we need to be prepared for this weather. It's we're in drought conditions now. A lot of us are in second stage drought. There was a little bit of rain last night, not enough to relieve the drought conditions, I'm afraid. Maybe just enough to keep us going, but things are going to need water. We're going to have to prepare for that. We're going to talk about how to do that. It's going to get worse in general. I hope it's off and on chances of rain next week. But here's what happens along the Gulf Coast. That rain, it won't penetrate. It won't get far enough down in Alabama. It might be raining way up above Citronelle. Might get tons of rain up there. But down along the Gulf Coast, the closer you get to the Gulf, the more likely we are to be in a serious drought come April and May. We've had a little more than 1 inch of rain. We'll be back. We're going to talk about it. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Me and my best friend Lillian and her blue tick hound dog Gideon, sitting on the front porch, cooling in the shed, singing every song the radio played, waiting for the Alabama sun to go down to red dirt girls in a red dirt town. Me and Lillian, just across the line in a little southeast of Meridian.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. What? So it's, you know, I got more planting to do. I got a lot more planting to do. It's like every spring I rediscover what really works. And the one thing I keep coming back to in my garden, what works for the flowers, what works for the vegetables, what works for the shrubs, is smart digging. You know, when you're trying to dig, have you thought about what you're trying to do when you dig? What are you trying to do when you dig? Well, you're trying to make a hole that you can put something in the ground. I agree. There is that. But how big should that hole be? And what are you trying to accomplish? You know, could you? I've seen people take post hole diggers. Heaven help us. I've seen people take post hole diggers. And drive that post hole digger in the ground, because you had to make a hole in the ground and put something in. Well, you know, that's wrong. It doesn't work for a lot of reasons. That post hole digger just makes these slick sides. It's just like, well, it's like, I don't know, it would be. It doesn't work for a lot of reasons. You can barely, the plant's going to keep wrapping its roots around in the loose soil in the middle of that hole. It's not going to have a lot of room to get out. But what is wrong with that post hole? It doesn't allow water to infiltrate to where the roots of your new plants are. It means that the area where water can get in is just a small little bitty little teeny tiny hole. Water's going to have a hard time finding that. It's the water in the ground is not going to transfer well into that tiny little hole. That's a problem. If water gets in there, it's going to sit there because it's not going to transfer out of the hole very well because the soil is loose in that hole. So what we want to do is we want the hole to be, if you're going to plant a shrub or a tree, the hole needs to be wide enough that allows water to infiltrate. So we're trying to get water to infiltrate. That's true. We want the water to infiltrate as deeply as possible. Not only do we want water to infiltrate, we want oxygen and carbon dioxide, all of these things that are very, very important to your root survival. Those roots need more than just water. They need oxygen. They need to be able to expel carbon dioxide through the soil. If they don't, they drown, just like you would if you're underwater without any oxygen. You drown. Same thing happens to plant roots. So you've got to have space in the soil for both of those things to happen, and that space needs to be moderately deep. At the same time, you don't want to destroy the soil structure. You don't want to destroy the soil structure. The soil is structured by all the creatures that live in it. It's very important to understand that. And they keep the perfect distance between particles. It's hard for you to see because you don't live underground. You have a hard time imagining what's happening underground because you've never been underground. But they keep the perfect distance between those tiny little soil particles because soil is not like a bag of flour. It's as if it's like the flour has been cooked and baked with yeast and other things so that it has that perfect space between the particles, right? It's like the biscuit. It's like the bread. That's what good soil is like. It's not the flour. Not that raw flour that just has no substance. It just is like it moves around. It's as if the soil has been baked by all the creatures living in it into this loaf that has all these perfect air particles. You destroy that when you run the tiller over it. You destroy that when you run the tiller over it. And you don't want to do that. But if you use a fork, because there is a hard pan, inevitably, and I can tell you why that develops. It's about 6 inches down, 3 inches down, 6 inches down. You'll see it. It's there, particularly now that it's beginning to dry out. You'll try to drive a fork into the ground or your shovel, and you hit something, and you think, gosh, it's like rock. It's like clay, and it's just probably just sand that's formed a hard pan. That's why it's called a hard pan. You need to crack that. You can do it with a shovel. It's easier with a fork. But all you do is crack it. You don't turn it upside down. That way, most of the soil structure is still intact. All that work is still intact. But you create some deeper areas that break that hard pan. You do that about every foot. You'll be fine. Take the weeds off the top. You'll be in great shape. There are a lot of ways to do that. But start small. Start small. There's no need to do this in a big way. Give us a call. We can talk about specifically how to do it. How to do it. Here's what I've been doing. So where am I getting organic matter? Is the thing that feeds the soil. It's not fertilizer. Fertilizer does not really feed the soil. Fertilizer is lubricant. It's grease that keeps some processes going. But it isn't the primary food. The primary food that the soil needs and that your plant needs is organic matter. It's something we forgot for a long time because we weren't very smart, but now it's increasingly people recognize that. It's why no-till farming works, is because it preserves whatever organic matter is there. It helps to preserve it. No-till agriculture is a big deal right now in agriculture. People are trying to figure out how to make that work. That's why it works. You can do it, and you can do it much better. What I am looking for now, because, you know, I'm in a panic. I'm always in a panic in spring because there's always more than I wanted. There's always more to do than I've gotten prepared for. So I'm creating some new beds where I need to plant my melons pretty quick. I need to plant my running squash pretty quick. And I need some beds for that. I need some beds for my okra and other things. And I know that's what's going to make the difference in how those beds operate is cracking that hard pan. All I'm doing is cracking it, getting rid of as many weeds as I can. We can talk about how to do that. And secondly, I'm going to need to add organic matter. And I'm not going to till it in. That is the wrong thing to do. Organic matter has always been on the top. And I've got to find this organic matter. Where are you going to get organic matter? Well, leaves break down, and that's good. If you've got a pile of leaves that are broken down, that's a really nice thing. That's a great thing. You've got your organic matter there. You've probably got a nice pile of organic matter. As long as you can shred those leaves easily by hand, you know, if they're kind of a little wet and soggy and you can just tear them apart, or if they're very crumbly, you know they're ready to go. You know they're already ready. They don't have to be completely broken down in the soil yet. They just need to be ready. That's, you can just put that on top. That's okay. Sometimes if you're starting from seed, sometimes it needs to be a little better broken, but you can just move those leaves aside where you need to plant the seed, plant them directly in soil, and the seeds will as the organic matter, as the leaves break down, the soil creatures will pull that into the soil and it'll be just fine. Everything's fine. One of the other things that I think people never think about is wood. Wood makes incredible organic matter. It's been happening in the forest for a long time. it really is a great thing. But obviously, some types of wood you can't use in the garden. You don't want to till them in. They're too coarse. But look around. If you've had a pile of, firewood or something like that, or sticks in your yard, and that it's beginning to get rotty around the outside, which happens very quickly here in our climate, that makes the most incredible topsoil you can imagine. Just put it right where you want to grow stuff. You actually may be able to sow stuff right in it. Hey, we'll be back. We're going to talk a little bit more about how to create your garden. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yeah, so we're talking about using wood to garden with, and I know that sounds not right, but we're not talking about big pieces of wood. We're talking about wood after it breaks down. In our climate, wood breaks down very quickly, and when it breaks down, it breaks into some of the best soil you could ever use in your garden. It's absolutely incredible. It's funny because, you know, we had to have some water oaks cut down in our yard, and I think I'm going to use these water oaks for firewood because our fireplace still works. Well, there aren't many occasions for using firewood in Mobile. So the firewood just sits there for a year. And if you don't use that water oak within a year in this climate, it's amazing. It's almost soil. At least a large percentage of the firewood was already soil. It was incredible, and it makes great soil. And you can just take that soil and put it right where you want things to grow. It will make a ton of difference. It will make a ton of difference. It's a great thing. So somebody writes me and says, yeah, we got a message from Keith. We had trees cut down, and long story short, where all the bark was laying on the ground is where my wife is getting soil for a garden, and my daughter is digging up worms. And it is incredible. That is how forests have functioned for a long time. It's how fields have functioned, is by using that organic matter. It's how soil has functioned for 400 million years, more or less. You know, give it 50 million years either side of that. For about 400 million years, that's how things have worked. It's just that organic matter feeds the soil and makes the soil incredibly rich. That's what rich soil is. It has nothing to do with nitrogen, very little to do with nitrogen. Nitrogen plays a small role. Fertilizer plays a tiny, tiny role. It's the organic matter that makes the difference. The organic matter, the moisture, the soil creatures working together is what creates good soil, good topsoil. That's what you got to do. Got a text. I got this shrub from a wonderful lady, and I'm told through this text, and she called it a dogwood bush. And I'm seeing this a lot more. I saw it on several texts. It's funny how names get us all twisted around and confused. This is a wonderful old shrub that people have forgotten about for a long time. It's actually not, some people call it English dogwood, but it is not English. It's very American. It's very Southern. It's very much a part of Alabama. Has been long before people came to Alabama. It's not English. It's Alabamian. It's not a dogwood. It's not a dogwood at all. In fact, I think if I remember correctly, it's more closely related. Gosh, it may be more closely related to hydrangea. I'll have to think about that. But it is not a dogwood at all. It's neither English nor dogwood. But that's what some people call it. And I guess somebody calls it a dogwood bush because it vaguely resembles a dogwood. Not really, I mean, in the sense that it has four white petals, and so does a dogwood. But it's blooming in a lot of people's yards. Four white petals, this beautiful little yellow center. on a bush that can get, typically around 6 feet to 12 feet tall, but not a tree. Always lots of sprouts coming with peeling bark that reminds you of some types of hydrangeas, kind of a peeling bark. Let's call it Philadelphus is the Latin name for it. There ought to be a good name that doesn't cause confusion, but all of the common names cause confusion. Philadelphus is what it is. Mock orange is another name for it. It vaguely resembles an orange flower, but only vaguely. It vaguely resembles a dogwood flower, but only vaguely. It's this beautiful shrub that people have forgotten about, and it is beautiful this time of year. It is absolutely beautiful. You'll find it in old gardens. You rarely find it for sale in garden centers. The ones that are for sale, the Philadelphus that are for sale in garden centers, tend to be European relatives that aren't very good in our gardens. But this is Philadelphus grandiflorus, grandifolius, grandiflorus it is, sorry. And it's long been a part of Alabama's gardens. I wish more people had it. It's just a beautiful thing. It's a great thing. So, it's not a red twig dogwood. It's not a dogwood at all. It's Philadelphus. Goes by a lot of names, all of them confusing. English dogwood, dogwood bush, mock orange, but Philadelphus. Like Philadelphia, Philadelphus. And that way there's absolutely no confusion. That seems to be the best name I can come up with for that shrub. And it's not a bad name. It's a pretty name. I'm not sure why it's called Philadelphus, but at any rate, there it is. That's what we got. Got a great picture from Dan with a garden spider cleaning up his garden. Other pictures from folks. Looks like I got a picture of a very pretty, another great shrub that we have forgotten about for the Gulf Coast. It's a really cool shrub. It's a neat thing, and it's got these kind of leathery evergreen-like leaves and these beautiful little flowers, tons of little flowers that are bell-shaped. They look like little white bells all over it, and the bells are small, but they're quite attractive on long stems. Those little bells are always a good sign that it is a vaccinium, that it's a blueberry. What you're looking at is a blueberry. There are a lot of blueberries. We can call them huckleberries if you like. That's fine. They're all blueberries. They're all huckleberries. They're all the same. Those names don't mean anything in a way. There's a lot of different kinds of blueberries and huckleberries native to the South. This one is called the winter blueberry. I'm going to call it the winter blueberry. Farkleberry is what some people call it. I have no idea where we came up with that name. Farkleberry or sparkleberry, some people call it. It's which is a name that doesn't make any sense at all if you look at the shrub, but it is an incredible tree, makes a small tree. Some people call it Lily of the Valley tree because the flowers resemble Lily of the Valley. And right now, those trees in the woods and in my yard, because I have one in my yard, I love it, are just covered with flowers, and the bees are just swarming them. Not just honeybees, but bumblebees and carpenter bees and digger bees and little euglossid bees. All of the little tiny little bees that are so good at pollinating blueberries, and it's an incredible little thing. It has edible blueberries. The blueberries will be ripe in winter. It is the winter huckleberry, the winter blueberry. But they'll be high up in the tree, and they're small. A lot of people don't collect them, but they're good. They're good little berries. Not the best, I think. Not the best blueberries, but they're good. They're very good blueberries. Winter blueberry, and what a beautiful, beautiful tree. What a beautiful shrub that is. Hey, Give us a call this morning, 251-343-0106. Let's talk about your yard. Let's talk about what's there. Let's talk about what you need to be doing. We've been talking a lot about getting that ground ready, what the ground really needs. And I'm going to say it one more time. Start small. That's all you need to do. And you don't need a lot of tools to do it. You just need to know what you need to accomplish. Dan said I had a good metaphor. So, Dan, maybe I'll stick with it. You know, when you're trying to create soil, you're not trying to turn that soil into flour. It's not like a bag of loose flour. What you're trying to do is you're trying to create a structure there, and it's more like the flour has been cooked and is in a bread loaf, and it has this open structure inside, right? It's not a bunch of little grains anymore that just have no structure, that just drift around. That's a sand dune. You don't want a sand dune. What you want is something with all that structure, like baked bread, like baked biscuits, like cornbread, like the flour after it's created the structure. Now, what creates the structure are the soil creatures that live in the soil. They glue things together in certain ways. They penetrate and make holes in certain ways, and then when they make those holes, they actually glue the insides of those holes so that the holes don't collapse. So you've got a structure inside your soil that you're trying to preserve. That's why you don't want to use a tiller. That's why you just want to crack it. And that's why you want to put the topsoil on the top so you can feed those soil creatures who maintain that soil structure. It's like baked bread. You run a tiller through it, you've destroyed it. You've destroyed the loaf. You've destroyed your soil structure. It isn't any good anymore. So that's what we're talking about. Let's start small. Just use a fork. Let's look for organic matter in places that we can add to the top of the soil that keeps those creatures fed. If you have any questions about how to get started, or if you have any questions about what's happening in your yard right now, you give us a call this morning. We'll talk about it, 251-343-0106. You know, the other thing that people think about when they're starting a garden is, oh, I've got all these things I got to plant. I want to plant corn. I want to plant tomatoes. I want to plant eggplants and okra. I want to plant peppers. I want to plant beans. I want to plant all these. You know, they want to plant kale and greens. Here's the important thing you need to know. If you're going to be successful, you cannot plant all of those things at one time. Even if you could physically do it. Even if you could physically maintain the yard. You can't, in our climate, and you should not, plant all of those seeds at one time. A lot of good reasons for that. One is the climate, and one is the seasons. We have things called seasons. And certain plants do better in some seasons than in the others. We have a cool season, we have cool season crops, and we have warm season crops. And then we have midsummer crops, the humid season crops, the heat crops, the hot crops that really kick in around July with hot nights. So we have cool season, warm season, and then the really hot, warm night crops, the hot night crops. And those have to be planted at different times. So we can talk a little bit about that. We can talk a little bit about what it is you need to plant right now. And that applies whether we're talking about flowers, whether we're talking about vegetables, whether we're talking about shrubs. So we're starting small because we only need to plant a small part of what we're doing. And right now, we're getting into those hot night crops. We'll talk about what they are when we come back.
Song. ding dong, I'll take a trip to China.
Awfully far.
Cornbread, butter beans, then back to North Carolina.
Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Carol's asking me, thanks, Carol, for your note. But she also asked me, when my husband burns a load of cardboard and paper, are those ashes useful in the garden yard? Yes. Yes. Paper, cardboard, they're just fine. They'll be just fine. If you have a lot of plastic in it, probably not so good. If there's any other products in there, if there's like styrofoam, I don't think that's a good thing to have in there. But if it's just paper and cardboard, you're right. It's nothing but trees that have been compressed into pulp. There's not a lot of bad stuff in it. It's going to volatilize when you burn it. If there's any dioxins or anything else, they're probably not going to be in the residual product, and they'll be just fine for using as ashes in your garden. So don't worry about that. Ashes are another thing that I look for this time of year, particularly in Alabama. Particularly in South Alabama, I'm not suggesting that you go out and burn if you're not normally burning. It's a lot of us do burn occasionally. Ashes can be very beneficial for a garden. They are more effective than lime at raising the pH. Your organic matter will help to raise the pH considerably. Some crazy people who don't understand how things work, no, they're not crazy. They just don't understand how things work. They will insist that organic matter acidifies your soil. It does not acidify your soil in Mobile County. I guarantee it. It does not acidify any soil. I can't even think, even in places with limestone, it's not going to acidify the soil to any great degree. It actually is going to bring that soil into a neutral zone, what we call a neutral zone, around somewhere between 6 and 6.5. And you know, what is the pH that most plants like? What is the chemical pH level, that which is a measure of whether it's acid or limey or neutral? What is that pH level? That pH level that plants like is between 6 and 6.5. That's the level that organic matter breaks down into, is around 6 and 6.5. Normally our soils here in Mobile County are around 5, maybe lower, 4.5 to 5. Because they're heavily leached and don't have a lot of organic matter. You put in that organic matter and it brings it up to 6. If you add a little bit of ashes, you can bring it up right up to about 6.5. And it makes a lot of difference. It's very effective, more effective than lime. Plus it adds potassium. Which potassium for some plants, for many plants, is more important than nitrogen. And I'm beginning to discover that. It's a really important ingredient, a really important lubricant in the soil in terms of keeping things going. So there you are. Those are going to be just fine. Somebody says, how best to plant seeds if garden has leaves and old hay and manure from last year? Also lots of healthy weeds. Should I just start seeds and then transplant, or can I just put the seeds in? So here's it makes a difference what you're doing. With okra, let's talk about the things that need to be direct seeded. Beans, direct seed beans, put them straight in the ground. Okra, it's almost always better to start okra in the ground. Squash seeds in the ground, melon seeds in the ground. Those are things that need to go directly in the ground, and there are a few others, but we'll come back and talk more about that in our next hour. The things that need to be direct seeded, the things that you can start in pots, this time of year. Earl, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill. How are y'all?
Good.
I know you talk a lot about the compost piles.
Yeah.
And don't let the leaves and the grass clippings and all that go to the garbage. But I've never heard you talk about how to maintain a compost pile, what you need to do to keep it productive.
Well, so
Listen, Bill. Thank you very much.
Good, Earl. And so it's a great question. Why don't I do talk a lot about organic matter. You know, there's this thing called composting, and it has been, people write books about it. The only reason that you would actually need to write a book about compost is if you didn't really understand how compost worked. To be fair, if you live in Boston and if you live in northern climates, you really have to work hard to get things to break down. In dry climates and in northern climates, and if you're doing a commercial grade operation with composting, you need to think about that a lot. In a garden, things are going to break down without, you don't need a book to do composting. All you need to do, and I try to stress this over and over and over, is put the organic matter on the ground. That's all you got to do. It's better to put it on the ground where you want to grow things. So if you build your compost pile, Earl, if you build a compost pile over under a tree, you know who's going to benefit from the compost pile? The tree, not your garden. Most of the benefits of that compost pile, by the time you get it to the garden, have already gone to the tree, right? Your compost needs to go in your garden. So, and your pile needs to be in the garden where you want to grow things. So one of the things I recommend, if you're just starting your garden, you're going to make a little patch, as big as you can manage. And we can talk about how big that needs to be. If you want to call me, we can talk about it. And then I'm going to take another part of your garden, crack that soil, don't even worry about taking up the leaves, and just start piling leaves right there. I'm sorry, don't worry about taking up the weeds. Just pile your leaves right there in your garden, because you know you're going to use that space this fall. Just start piling your leaves right there. Let them molder down there. And you don't have to move it, you don't have to turn it, you don't have to do anything, because those leaves are going to break down. You know, I could talk about adding nitrogen and making sure you got the right balance of grass leaves, and none of that really matters, not in our climate. It's all going to break down. If you use nothing but grass leaves that are fresh green, you could run into some trouble, but it's not a lot of trouble. It'll all fix itself. It all recovers. So don't make your composting difficult. The one thing to do is put it where you want a garden. I will say that it is useful from a lot of perspectives to make your compost pile, if you're going to do it like I said to do it, and you're creating a space where you're going to garden next year, to start out about 4 feet high with leaves. That's a good place to start. It's all going to break down just fine. We can talk about why people worry about heating things up. We can talk about all that, but I don't want to make it difficult. All you do is put the organic matter on the ground. Charlie, have we got time for another call, or should we wait until... Yeah, well, let's start. We may have to... Ed, I'm listening. What's up?
Yeah, hi. Good morning. I went with the small garden that you talked about. I planted... 1 watermelon, a few tomato plants, and 4 stalks of corn. Is there a regular fertilizer I could put on there right now?
Well, yeah, there's probably lots of fertilizer you can put on there right now. You know, it's there's nothing really magical about any fertilizer. I would just say, Ed, to be quick, because we're going to run out of time.
Yeah.
And because you haven't done, and you can call me back after this break, but I would just say, for the time being, it's not a great long-term solution, but you're going to need some, you might need a little bit of Miracle-Gro. Just use Miracle-Gro. It's a simple thing. You won't mess it up.
That's the one diluted with a water sprayer and just sprinkling.
Yeah, that's right. It's an expensive way to fertilize. It's not the best way to fertilize, but it'll get you going. And then when we come back, the organic matter, as it breaks down, provides the fertilizer that the garden needs. And there's a few other things you can add. I like to start out with the organic matter. It's got plenty of nutrients in it. Remember, the fertilizer is just grease. It just kind of keeps a few processes going. The organic matter is the most important part. There's nutrients embedded in that organic matter. That'll be great.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can add a little bit of ashes. A little bit of fireplace ashes really can help. And then on top of that, I might use stuff like blood meal in the long run if I think I need an extra boost of nitrogen. But Ed, I'm going to keep it simple for you. I would just say right now use the organic, use the Miracle-Gro, and make sure you add organic matter. That's going to be hugely important.
All righty.
Good. And we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about fertilizing when we come back.